What's happening, everyone, and welcome to Sports Bible Stories. I'm Rory Jennings.
And I'm Maz Merzadeh.
And today, we welcome the one and only Tony Pulis onto the show. Thank you so much, Tony.
No problem.
Really, really appreciate you coming on. Thank you. What have you been up to? You haven't been working now since the Sheffield Wednesday job, which was, what, December 2020?
No, I've had a great time, actually. I've always, in my life, in my management life, lived away from home. So I've had a house in Bournemouth, and all the clubs, I think it's 12 clubs I've had. I've always kept the family, Debbie and the children down there, and travelled. So to actually have the opportunity and chance to actually settle down in a we've got a beautiful house down there on the coast. So, yeah, it's been lots of stuff. I've done lots of stuff with different people. That have kept me busy. Obviously, I do the radio, TV sometimes, and bits and pieces. I keep in touch with the football. But no, I've enjoyed it. I keep myself busy. I'm not one of them that can sit around. So there's always something going on. And
have you got any interest in getting back into management?
I would be reluctant to go back in as a manager. I've had people ring me and ask for a little bit of advice, and would I pop in and see them and do bits and pieces. And I've done that with one or two sports as well, not just football. So that has been interesting. The other sports that I've got involved with have been interesting and different in some ways. But in the majority of instances, building a sports programme.
When you're looking for, like, to get into a club, what's, like, the key things for you? Like, what's important when choosing a club?
What, as a manager?
Yeah.
The most important thing is the chairman, really, is the owner. I think the game's changed since, you know, I was managing in the 90s, which was probably before some of you were born. it's what's name. Then there was a manager, a secretary, and the chairman. So there was no one in between, really, the manager and the chairman, apart from the secretary, who ran the finances. So you could actually get things done pretty quickly. And also, you were given the opportunity and the time to build something because there was no noise in between. Mm. If you have a look at today, you know, the layers in between the coach, as they call them now, or the manager, is just extraordinary. And, you know, when you've got different layers and different people involved, there's always going to be a conflict somewhere in what you want to do and what you want to achieve as a manager. And I find that that is a big issue for managers today or for coaches today. And if I was starting again today, whereas I've always had people who have come in and been coaches, I would definitely have someone now who worked above me, came in with me, but worked above me, worked at boardroom level, and looked after that side of the business or the club, while I got on with the football side, because I don't think, no disrespect to the people who are in positions, but I don't think there's a strong enough bond between them and the managers when it comes to a manager being sacked. I think if someone came in with me and knew that if I got the sack, he got the sack, I think he'd fight a lot more than the person who's there, who is not going to get the sack when I get the sack. And is going to see me off and then most probably see the next manager off and the next manager off. And I think personally, and again, this is just me, my thoughts, and I've said it before, I think if Frank Lampard had had someone at Chelsea above working in that area, he most probably would have kept his job a little bit longer than what he did. I'm not being disrespectful to anybody here. I just think someone who is with a manager or a coach and knows his job's on the line if he loses it, works and will try a lot harder to keep him in the job than maybe one or two who are in that position who are not affected by the manager being sacked.
Mm. So pick the chairman, not the club.
Yeah.
Would be the strategy.
I've had numerous chairmans. Numerous people in charge, and there's you find when you get into a football club, you find things can be different, and I've always thought that the relationship. You know, I look back, Norman Haywood at Bournemouth was my first chairman. The club were in a lot of financial trouble. Norman was very honest with me, very, very understanding in respect of the work I had to do. It was laid out in front of me, and we had to try and get the finances right. It was honest and straightforward. And then I've had other people, you go in and, you know, they say one thing, and then they do other things. And, you know, I've just always been one that if I didn't think it was right, then I don't think I've ever hung around too long.
So, Tony, we're going to try and get to know you a bit better now.
Yep.
We've got some quick-fire questions for you, if that's all right.
Yep.
Who did you support when you were growing up?
Cardiff and Man City. Man United, sorry. Man City. Cardiff and Man United.
Both?
Yeah, well, Cardiff was... I was in Newport. It should have been Newport, really. But I was brought up with Toshack playing at Cardiff before he got sold to Liverpool a long, long time ago. So I would go to Ninian Park when I had the opportunity and the chance and watch those games. And really, you know, that was my first taste of, you know, I thought then Cardiff were a big club.
Mm. And what was the Man United?
Man United was more from my father, I think. And they had the great team then, the team in 68 that won the European Cup with Best, Law, Charlton. You know, wasn't a bad team to follow.
Yeah, not bad at all.
And what about your favourite footballer now?
Favourite footballer now? I think Harry Kane is a fantastic player. I think over a period of time, he has shown the consistency at the top level for everybody to have tremendous respect for him.
And do you think he'll stay at Tottenham? I know there's a lot of talk about him leaving potentially. Do you see him leaving?
Oh, blimey. You know, I'd be amazed if he left. But I've been amazed loads of times in my life with football.
Did you have a favourite manager growing up?
Well, Jimmy Schooler was at Cardiff. You lot won't know him. When I was, and I did a few stories about Jimmy. He was a Scotchman, very passionate. And then obviously Matt Busby, those two teams that I'd followed, Sir Matt and most probably Jimmy. They were the two that I knew more than the others.
And what about favourite manager now?
Favourite manager now? I think the Premier League are very fortunate to have, and have had most probably some of the greatest managers of my era, especially. So it's been a pleasure to manage against Pep and you know, Antonio, and you go on. Wenger was obviously fabulous at Arsenal. All the clubs who have been successful. Klopp and them, I've been fortunate to manage against them. The only one that really has missed out has been the Atletico Simeone. Mm-hmm. You know, who you know, I look at, listen, and people talk to me about him, and he's most probably the only one that slipped through the net and hasn't managed in England. It would have been lovely to have seen him come to England and see how he set a club up and set a side up.
Do you think it would work? Do you think he would have?
Yeah, I think the top managers, given the opportunity, they know how to win. They
I think
know
Eddie Howe. Yeah. Eddie Howe went out to learn from him. I think in the gap that he took between the Bournemouth job and taking Newcastle, I think he went to study Diego Simeone's approach. Did you ever do anything like that?
I went out. I went out a couple of times and watched different people work. When I was at Stoke, I went out to Germany and did a bit there and in Spain. Just watched training, watched the setup, had a look at things, and especially the youth development side of it as well, and seen the difference between, or tried to find the difference between what the Germans and the Spanish do compared to our setup. But that was 10, 12 years ago. Since then, obviously, the academies have come in. Mm. And we're spending now an absolute fortune on developing young players. The academies have become an industry within an industry. And, you know, in some ways, a bigger. They have more, you know, more staff. There's a lot of money now invested in the production of young kids. So, yeah, I think we've got an industry that football invests more than any other country in the world in. Yeah. So we're very fortunate.
Talking of Germany, we've seen a lot of the young English players going out there. Do you think that's the right move for like the academy players?
I don't think the Germans are daft, and I think they've most probably understood the workings that are going on in England in respect to the academies. And see, the problem you've got with all the top academies, if you look at Chelsea, Man City, and they need to win. I don't know. At the moment, Chelsea ain't doing that, but they need to win. So they, irrespective of all the money that they're ploughing into the young players, managers are coming in, and especially when Abramovich was there, you know, they needed to win trophies and to blood young players and take a chance with young players. They didn't do it very often, and I think Chelsea have produced a lot of very, very good players, and then they've left because they couldn't get first team football. And I think if you look at the big clubs, there's a lot of good talent that never get the opportunity to play in their first teams because of the demands of that team to win and win and win, not to develop. And that's an interesting fact. It's also, if you're clever enough, as a person who's got enough money to invest, it's a real good place to fish because you will get some real quality players who haven't broke through yet, but would become good players given the opportunities.
Like the Southampton model, they've looked at City's youth products and
taken. Yeah, and you know that is most probably if like I say, if you look at the top clubs, the money they're paying to bring young players from South America all over the world and put them into their academies, they're bringing families over, you know, they're settling them in and everything else. They are investing enormous amounts of money. So if you're with a smaller club or a club that's got a little bit of money, instead of chasing your tail all over the world, really and truthfully, if you could sit and study four or five of the top Premier League clubs who invest hundreds of millions of pounds in their academies, then there's certainly talent there.
Away from football a bit, Tony, what's your biggest interest away from the game?
History. I've always been very, very keen to read about leaders. Going back, you know, way, way back, you know, the Roman Empire. I spent a lot of time on Napoleon. Was really interested in a little kid who was born in Corsica and then ends up, you know, producing and being in charge of a great empire, actually taking an army into Moscow and sitting in Moscow. How long did he sit there? For a couple of months until the weather turned and he got chased out. So, you know, there's not many people who have taken armies into Russia and gone all the way to Moscow. So he interested me as a lad who'd come from quite a wealthy family in Corsica, but then had been placed in a school in France. And I think at the time, Corsica was split between Italy and France. Half of them wanted to be Italians, half of them wanted to be French. For him to be stuck into an academy as such a young lad, and then to go through, and you know, it was interesting to see the steps he took to eventually get where he got. And that was, you know, a lot of people say he was a tyrant and everything else. I thought he was a very, very clever man and a fabulous tactician on the battlefield.
Do you see a bit of yourself in Napoleon?
No, not at all. No. I they interest me. The people who have come from nothing. You know, I've read loads of books. You know, Shackleton, you know, the Endurance. I don't know if you've read
Explorer,
that book.
Yeah.
That is just an amazing book where, you know, the whole expedition falls to bits when they get caught in ice. And I think he had 38, 39 people with him, and or it might have been more than that. And after 18 months in the most horrendous conditions, you know, he ends up bringing them all back safe and sound. You know, the ship had broken up. They only had two small rowing boats. You know, they had to get to Elephant Island, and from there to I think it was Georgia. Just extraordinary. You know, these people are just extraordinary people who lived in obviously a different era, different values to us, and different motivations. But yeah, you know, people who have done and achieved things interest me.
Huge. What about within the game? Any career regrets?
I left South Wales when I was 16 years of age. I was brought up in a big family down on the docks, only a couple of streets away from the dock gates. There was four boys in one bed, two girls in another bed, mum and dad in a little box room. So there was eight of us living in a little house. And we didn't have a lot, but we had everything. The community was fabulous. It was a fabulous community I was brought up into. To have the opportunity at 16 years of age of going to a professional football club. And I always say this to people. I can remember looking out the window in that carriage and saying, I'm not going to come back. I really, really want to make a go of this. And 50 odd years later, nearly, I'm still doing stuff in football. So have I got regrets? None whatsoever. I've just been so blessed.
That's such a nice outlook, isn't it?
Yeah, no, 100%. And I know the answer to this. Well, I'm sure I will. But are you a tracksuit manager or a suit manager?
Yeah, tracksuit.
You love, what's your favourite tracksuit? Do you have like one?
I think the caps were more of a problem for me. I used to be very choosy with what caps I wore. The tracksuits were okay. Mm. And at the time when I was managing, I could get into some of them. Now I've put a bit of timber on them.
What was the proudest moment of your career?
Greatest achievements, I think, being in the game for so long and enjoying it for so long. Regrets? No, I don't. It's I'm not one of them. I don't, I leave a football club and I leave it behind and I leave the memories and I try and wash away all the bad stuff and just concentrate on all the good stuff and be really positive with it. And, I'm 65 now. So, I just want to go through life enjoying myself. I don't know what I'm doing here, but
less of that, Tony. Less of that, man. Jesus.
Yeah, you have to put up with one or two things.
And who was the most influential person on your career?
I had a few. I think, and again, it's a great miss in football at the moment. When I went to Bristol Rovers, I started at 15, 16. We had wonderful mentors. We had wonderful people, senior people around the club who were full-time and part-time, but they were real football people, genuine football people, but also football has always reflected life and the community out there. And I think I'm a great believer that it sort of like it when I was younger, it pulled away or it pulled with everything just sort of like came together. And I was taught from a very, very young age about respect, about discipline. And they were massive things at Bristol. The Bill Dodgin, Bill was in his 60s. Old Bobby Campbell, not the one who was at Chelsea. Gordon Bennett, Colin Dobson. Don Megson he gave me my debut when I was younger. And if I'm missing people, I do apologize. Mike Lyons, I do apologize. But they were all great mentors. They would pick you up. If you did anything wrong, they would pick you up. And they would encourage you. I had a very, very bad injury when I was 21 to my ankle. And I was out for nearly 9 months. And, plaster up top of my leg and then below my knee. And to be honest, there was a great feeling I couldn't play again. And I'd finished the season by playing one game in a third team on a very hard, bumpy pitch at Eastville. And I struggled, and I really struggled. And after the game, the club gave me an extra year. This contract used to get 1 year then. They gave me an extra year. And I think they gave me an extra year thinking at the back of their minds that I might not get through it. And that gave me so much confidence. I never worked so hard in my life that close season to get myself at a level.
Anyone ever given you any advice that you still live by today?
Alex Stock, who was a wonderful manager, and managed actually in Italy and managed QPR to a cup final and Fulham, I think it did. Was it Fulham? Or I think it was Fulham he took to a cup final. Alex was actually fought in the Second World War with Montgomery. In the desert, he was one of the desert rats. So when I was young manager starting at Bournemouth, Alex lived down there. He was actually in a care home, and I used to pop in and see him and sit down. They built him a lovely greenhouse, and he used to grow his own tomatoes and this, that, and the other. And he was a very, very upstanding person, shirt and tie always with a jacket, and you know, real stickler, and spoke really, you know, not posh, but proper English, not like us. And Alex said to me two things. He said, always believe your own eyes. Don't take any notice of anybody else apart from yourself, and make your own decisions and stand and fall by those decisions. And that was something I've always done. And if, like I say, if I smelt something that I didn't think was right, then it'd be very, very unusual for me to sort of like hang on too long if I didn't think it was right.
Right, well, you're perhaps renowned for your time at Stoke. And of course, it was that big phrase, a cold, wet Tuesday night at Stoke.
Yep.
First of all, how do you feel about that? And was that something you and the players were aware of?
I think the story at Stoke really started with our first Premier League game at Bolton. We got beat 3-1. I think Gary Megson was manager at Bolton at the time. And Paddy Power wrote us off. I think they paid up on us being relegated. That was the first weekend, and it was just the thing that I needed. It was just the impetus to get the city together. And I went on the radio, I went in the papers, I did a lot of media that week, and just made it, it's us, it's not the team, they're putting Stoke City down, us the city, you lot out there and us. And it was something that I just built on and built on. We played Villa, our first home game, beat Villa 3-2, I think. I think Mama scored late on from a long throw.
we'll get on to that.
And what's name? That set her off. And it was just, we built it from there, really. But it was, you know, people say, and I've been asked, oh, you must have thought, you know, it was you're going to be up against it, having got beat at Bolton. It was the best thing that happened because of what Paddy Power had done.
Can you settle this debate once and for all?
Yeah.
Could Lionel Messi do it on a cold Tuesday night in Stoke?
Yeah, couldn't he? He could do it anywhere. Play football. Yeah. He's just absolutely extraordinary player. And it'd be, you know, he might not get involved as much as maybe he might do in a warm climate, but he'd do two or three things during the game and win the game.
Yeah.
That's what he is. He's just a special, special person.
Would you say he's the greatest of all time? I know there's always that debate.
No, I've spoke to people about this. See, I'm a 50s baby, so, you know, I can remember Pelé. Pelé, Maradona, then I'd go Messi, Ronaldo. They would be a full standout. And then you've got, you know, again, it's great players of their time. You know, that's a thing. I don't think I can remember Pelé, so he was great at that time. I can remember Maradona, so he was great at that time. Messi, Ronaldo, Cruyff, you know, all you know, they're just wonderful players, special, special players.
What was it about Arsenal? You used to beat them every time you played them. Every single time, you used to get under their skin. It was an amazing achievement.
Yeah, I think that Arsenal helped us enormously by, you know, putting certain comments in the paper that we actually picked up on. You know, I during my management career, I'd always try and find an angle to play against different teams, and even I'd make things up. You know, I'd come in one day and say, you know, have you heard what that player has said about you and about the football club? And the player hadn't said nothing. It was just a motivational tool.
You're trolling.
That I would use. You know, I'd say the club had said, or the club had said that, you know, they hated coming to our place. You know, we weren't that good. We weren't this. We weren't that. And it was a load of nonsense. And the lads used to buy into it. And, you know, I'd seriously, after every game, I would make sure I got the local papers. So if we played, say, Blackburn, I'd want the local papers sent down to me so I could read them and find little bits and pieces. That's and then nice. Just keep that for when we played Blackburn again. And then, you know, so I'd have those little motivational. I always wanted an angle. I always thought the players, especially after maybe the two years in the Premiership, we needed a little bit more motivational at times to play against because we'd become a little bit more established. And then you got yourself in a situation where when we were playing the likes of maybe mid-table teams, we were playing at Stoke and we were expected to win. And that expectation wasn't with us the first 2 years. We were always the underdogs. And then it just gradually, we'd become more established. So I had to find a way of really getting into the players and getting that little bit extra that was the difference between winning and losing. Going back to Arsenal, I just think it was the supporters, you know, they'd be there about an hour and a half before the game, picking their spot, trying to get as close to Arsene as possible. So they could give him some stick. But, you know, it was special, special days. And I have nothing against Wenger at all. Arsenal's fabulous club. And, you know, one of the great clubs. When I was younger, it was the Arsenal. You know, people used to, and some people still say it. And, you know, you look at what they're doing today, what Arteta's done there. It's fabulous.
So Rory Delap, well-renowned for his long throws. You mentioned it earlier as well.
Yeah.
What was that like? You know, did you, every time that you saw it happen, would you still amaze you? Or would it just be like, right, we know he's good?
It started in training. The lads were having I think it was the promotion year. Was it the promotion year? I'm not sure. Or the first year in the Premiership. It might have been the promotion year. And they had a competition, who could throw it the furthest. Mm. And we'd finished training, there was four or five of them over in the corner. And David Kemp, who'd worked with me for years, I had Dave there, Jerry Francis, Mark Connor, Eddie Pennick, Reedy, I had all those people. Anyway, Kemp, he came over to me and he just said, have you seen Rory throw that ball? And, oh, no. And he said, come and have a look at this. And he was apparently a county javelin thrower. And your shoulder,
like double jointed,
double jointed in your shoulders, so he could actually get so much power from it. And I was just flabbergasted. Well, I actually give him a telling off. And why haven't you shown us this? And it just went from there. You know, we worked really, really hard on. We didn't just throw it in. I see teams today with long throws. It's funny, Arsenal have got a person who throws it long now as well. So, you know, I see people, you know, Liverpool got a throwing coach.
Yeah, yeah. That's about to say.
So, you know, the stick that we used to take is quite funny now. But no, we used to really set it up and work hard on our set plays.
So would you tactically do that? Would you try and win throw-ins at a particular...
No. When we got throw-ins, we'd work on where we wanted players to be. Yeah. And areas to attack, and where we thought teams would be vulnerable.
Was it just lump it up to Crouchy and then get the flick on?
Lump it up to Crouchy. Remember that goal he scored was against Man City?
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't even touch the ground. Yeah. He was, what a great player. Yeah. Peter was. Great lad.
And did you ever sign players with the tactic in mind?
No.
It wasn't like that?
No. I mean, the other thing is, what I'd like to say about Rory is Rory played over 500 games. He was a tremendous player and played a lot of Premier League games. And you don't play a lot of Premier League games, you know, just being a person who can throw the ball in. And a great, fabulous lad. You know, I had some wonderful, wonderful players at Stoke. You know, some real gritty, determined characters who you could build a club with.
Mm. His son's doing well at City, isn't he?
Yeah, Liam's just, I think he had a long spell at Stoke and now he's just gone to Preston, scored a few goals. They tell me he's a good talent. Yeah.
And talking of Stoke, you got them in their first and only FA Cup final. What was that occasion like, you know, managing the team?
Yeah, it was obviously the game before was against Bolton, was the semi-final, was the when we won 5-0 was absolutely out of this world. That was the first time that I think the club had been to Wembley since 1972. So, you know, they might have gone in the playoffs, I'm not sure. But anyway, that was a wonderful occasion. And we tried to replicate it with a Man City game. And unfortunately, you know, they beat us 1-0. I think we put in a real, when you look at City now and what they were going to develop into, you know, we missed two really good chances. Kenwin missed a great one-on-one chance before what's his name scored, the big tall midfield player. Great player.
Torre?
Torre, yeah. Great player. He scored the winning goal. So, Yeah, pleased for the supporters that they had two visits to Wembley, disappointed that we lost. You know, there's no satisfaction after you get beat.
How do you prepare for a game like that? Like, you're playing Manchester City, all of the riches of the club, you're up against Pep Guardiola. Yeah. Obviously, it's a mismatch in terms of the scale of what the clubs can do.
Well, when we went to the semi-final, what we decided to do, we trained Monday and Tuesday properly. When I say properly, that's similar to what we did. And had Wednesday off. And we arranged a train to go down to Wembley. We got a bus waiting for us at Waterloo Station. I think it was Waterloo or whatever it is, wherever it goes into. Now one Waterloo. Anyway, we got a bus waiting for us. And we went to Wembley. We didn't tell anyone we were going. We just turned up with a bus, drove into Wembley, parked it under the covers, got the players up in the stands, walked them on the pitch and everything else with our tracksuits. So they got a feel for the place. And then once we'd had a walk around and a look around, we then took them for an Italian meal in London and went back and prepared Thursday and Friday for Bolton. And then, you know, the great thing about the Bolton game, the players had come and seen me and said, oh, now that we're in a semi-final, can we have suits? And I said, no, you can't. You're joking. It's a semi-final. Get to a final, you can have a suit.
But that's a winner's mentality.
Yeah,
I like that.
That's not, you're not having one for the semi-final, of course. We turn up in our tracksuits and Bolton have got full brand new suits with roses. So again, my team talk was
there. You go.
Made really easy. And, you know, I ripped into a few little verses. And, you know, it was a fantastic day.
Any newspaper clippings that you had about the players?
I did have, you know, bucket full of stuff that I would, you know, I'd go in and just say to Kempy, you know, I'm going to say this and I'm going to say that. And David looked at me and go, where'd you get that from? I said, there, Dave.
Got my sources.
You know, and it, you know, like I say, I thought it helped.
So that cup final, obviously, it didn't go as you hoped, but the club ended up embarking on a European tour.
Yeah, Europe was fabulous. You know, it was a, you know, great occasion. And the last game against Valencia, obviously, we played at the Bet365 stadium. And, you know, the manager at Aston Villa now, and
Emery
was in charge of Valencia, and they beat us 1-0. They played really well that night. They really, really contained us. We didn't have as many chances as what we were hoping for, and they looked really strong. And we'd had quite a tough season. I think that year we played over 50 odd games. We got to a quarterfinals of the FA Cup that year. Liverpool knocked us out 2-1 at Anfield. I think we were 1-0 up and we missed another great chance to go 2-0 up. They beat us. We did quite well in the League Cup. And then we had these, I think we had 12 games in Europe, all in all. So there was still a concern about the league at that time, you know, as it is now. There's so many variations that can happen, and you can drop into a bad run of games or you can drop into a really good run of games. For the second game, I made a lot of changes. And I think a lot of supporters were disappointed with the changes we made. But actually, we went to Valencia and played really, really well. And apart from a very, very poor display from the referee and the fact that Kenwyn missed two or three really... I can see the header he's missed after about 10 minutes now from a corner. And you know, he'd bury it 9 times out of 10. He missed that chance. We played really well. Supporters then, you know, some of the supporters criticised me. And I accept criticism. But the criticism I would give myself was I should have played that team in the first leg. And not. I should have played them both legs because they were fresh. And we had that team, Upson, Woodgate, up front was Fuller, Cameron Jerome.
Yeah, good players.
You know, good players. Mm-hmm. You know, the like I say, the supporters took it as a second team. But when you look at that team was a good team and had more experience in Europe, some of them, than what the team I'd played against Valencia at home. But the experiences were just absolutely fantastic.
And off the back of that, Peter Coates described you as one of the best managers he's ever had. How proud were you when you heard those kind of comments?
But I had a great relationship with Peter. I actually, you know, obviously I started that first year and a half, 2 years, I actually had the Icelandic owners as the manager before Peter then took over. But Peter was always there in the background. We'd sit down. We just seemed to get on really, really well. And I've got the greatest respect for him and his family. I think, well, I don't think, I'm absolutely convinced that eventually they'll get back in the Premiership. I think his son now, John, has taken the reins and he's had a difficult time. But Peter had a difficult time at Stoke as well before all this success come along. So, you know, John will be learning on the job, but he's a determined man and he knows his football. And I think eventually, hopefully, fingers crossed, that they do get back to the Premier League and they bring the success to that city that it deserved, the people deserve.
An incredible acknowledgement, though. To refer to you as the best manager in Stoke's history.
Well, yeah, you know, that's lovely for Peter to say. You know, I'd say that he was part of that, you know, me getting that accolade. You know, he has to take a lot of credit for that.
You know, the players that you signed, it seemed to elevate for Stoke, didn't it? It went from being players that didn't necessarily have that element of glamour to quite Hollywood signings.
Well,
the likes of Crouch.
Yeah, I think the great thing about it was that, and this is what happens in this country, is perception. And once a person's got a perception of someone, it's very, very difficult for him, like I say, believe in your eyes. It could be doing something completely different. And because the perception is this, they just think it's this. Mm-hmm. It's black. I was told it was white. And, you know, so they're set in their ways. I think if you look at the team, and we used to chuckle about it a little bit, we had Etherington and Pennant wide, you know, and people like Crouchy, John Walters. We had a really, really good side there in the end. And, you know, we played some really, really good stuff, but we never said anything. Everybody said, oh, it's kicker and lump it stuff. And we, yeah, it is kicker and lump it. And before you know, as that great saying about could Messi play there, you know, clubs were coming and teams were coming and getting beat before the game started because they thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. It was a lot more than that.
And how hands-on were you with those transfers? Obviously, did you go to the Chevrolet?
Because I had my relationship with Peter, I had a big say in all those transfers. Those players, the majority of those players, well, all those players that when I was there, it would have been signed. You know, I'll tell you now, Crouchy's one. Harry had rung me and said Peter was available. I think Abbey had moved back up to Manchester. So Peter wanted to move from London to go with Abbey. So I said to H, listen, I don't think we'd be able to afford his wages. I don't think we'd be able to afford the fee, but we'd be interested. Harry came back to me and said the club would try and work something out if your club could raise a certain amount. So I rang Peter up and Peter said, okay, see you know where you can go and then come back to me when it gets a little bit more solid. So I went back to Peter and said, I think we're, you know, at the stage where, you know, you can decide whether we can do it or not. And about 5 minutes later, he rang me up and he said to me, people are asking me, and I'm taking it, people behind him, the chief executive and whoever, are asking me, spending all that money on a player you'll get no return, is it a good deal? And I said to Peter, it's not the fact that we're going to sell him for a profit. It's the fact that Crouch is going to keep us in the Premier League for the next 3 or 4 years. That's the investment. And he went, Tone, thank you very much. Put the phone down. And we signed him.
Huge. You know, there were a lot of players that arrived with a sort of similar profile in terms of who they were, the way that they approached the game, maybe even the way that they approached life. Jonathan Walters, Glenn Whelan, Ryan Shawcross. They're big characters. Would you put a lot of stock in not only the footballer, but the man?
Everything. Character was everything. I took it, this is the way I worked. I took it on building blocks, and those building blocks were players that you give 3-4 year contracts to. So Shawcross, Uth, Begovic, Sorensen, Whelan, you know, Dean Whitehead, people, John Walters, you know, people like that. They were building, they were solid citizens. They were ones that you, every week, they turned up. You know, irrespective of how it was going, they gave their best all the time. Glenn Whelan is a wonderful example. Every year we got promoted, we bought Glenn from Sheffield Wednesday. We got promoted, I wanted to get better. I brought what I thought was better in. Within weeks, Glenn stepped above that person I brought in. Then I'd bring someone else in and think, we can do better than Glenn. And then he'd step again. And I have so much respect for that boy over a period of time where he got better and he took the challenge. A lot of people would have gone, and thrown the baton away. Whelan just kept going and going. And I have so much respect for the kid for doing that. But just quickly, so those were long-term. And then you'd bring people in like Pennant. And Jermaine was a terrific player. And you couldn't question his ability or anything like that, but he was a little scallywag. So he was a 2-3 window signing. So you'd get the best out of him. And then when he dropped a little bit, which that's what Jermaine did, that was his character. When he dropped a bit, you'd move him on. So I'd have that building blocks, they stay, and you'd have one or two that would give the place a lift for a short period. And then you would cut and look for other people.
So do you have that in the back of your mind? Like, they will eventually leave at some point, even no matter how...
I had it in the back of my mind. I had it in what I did in respect of my prep for bringing players in. I knew their characters. I knew what they were like on the field, off the field. Everything that they did and didn't do and got up to, then I knew what they were doing. And I knew... you know, what they were like. And the promotion year, we had, you know, we took Creswell. And Cresy's, again, fabulous lad. And we played him wide left. And a lot of forwards, he's centre forward. A lot of forwards would have said, I can't play wide left. Mm. He was absolutely fantastic. I think he got 15 goals from left-hand side. Worked his socks off. Unbelievable. Liam Lawrence, again. Mm-hmm. You know, those two were just extraordinary in that championship. That promotion side, they never got the credit they deserved. You know, they were fabulous. And then you add Fuller, Ricardo to that. I had a very, very special relationship with Rick. Rick was one of those where you go off three, you know, window and then get rid of him. I fell in love with him, but I just understood.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I just understood his character. And what he needed to you know, rev the engine up. Because when he played, he was exceptional. He scored goals that if he had been at a top three or four club, you know, they'd be talking about it now.
Well, that Bergkamp one.
Well, yeah. The goals that Rick scored and the amount of games he just took by the scruff of the neck and won by doing something special was... And the players accepted him. You know, he was... Jamaican, every day was Christmas Day. You know, like, he'd boss name. He just, you know, he'd float in and he'd float out. But the lads, you know, I've got that great story. I've told it so many times. We're playing in promotion year and we've got Wolves. Wolves are third. West Brom are winning the league with Tony Mowbray was it. We're second, Wolves are third. And we've got a game with about five games to go, six games to go this season at Molineux. We've sold 6,500 tickets and it's on an international break. So we play just before the international break and we win. And then the lads are going off on their trips with the national sides. Rick hasn't got a game. We've looked everywhere. David Kemp has rung people up, but he's going away. He's got his bags packed. So, you know, I say to Rick, it's no game, mate. What are you doing? So he said, no, there's a friendly game. They've arranged a friendly game. So I've spoke to the manager. Who the manager was, I don't know. I haven't got a clue. But there's a game. So, okay, Kempy, let him go. Let him have a week away. Kempy, big game when he comes back. Let him have a week away. So off he goes. So I said, Rick, Monday, you know, you've got your game the first week. Make sure you're back in, and then it's preparation. Big player for us. Yeah, can. Don't worry about me. I'll be back. So we get in on the Monday. We have that free week, and then we get in on the Monday for the preparation for the Wolves game. So we get in, no Ricardo. Tuesday, no Ricardo. I'm going absolutely potty. I've got Dave Watson, who's a physio, who's got his number. He's ringing him. He can get him now and then it breaks down, and then he can't get him. And he's got to come in Thursday. No Ricardo. Friday, no Ricardo. So I'm absolutely...
There's a game on Saturday as well. Yeah.
I'm absolutely livid. So we prepare for the game by having pre-match at the Bet365 Stadium. So it's only 40 minutes down the road to Wolves. So everyone's in at 12. Then at past 12, we're going to get off and get to the game. So Rick walks in. You know, he's got his hat on the side of his head. He's wobbling away. And all the players have completely disowned him. They're on there's a table there with all the lads. And he's walked past the table and he's tried to get an acknowledgement from someone. And they've all blanked him. And he's walked up there and there's a little table at the top of the room and he's by himself. He's got his beans and his eggs. And he's so I'm like with Kempy and I'm going to kill him, Kempy. And we're going to act. And Kempy's going to me. Dave's my assistant. Tom, leave him. We'll need him. I've picked the team. He's not starting. So yeah, I've gone, Kempy, he can't get away with what he's got away with. And he's gone, leave him. Just leave him. So he gets up. All the players leave, get on the bus. We're still sat here. So he gets up. So I go, all right, Rick. So he goes, yeah. He says, sorry, Gaff. He said, I've been in and out of Miami. Wrong passport, wrong this, wrong that. Oh, Rick. Just go. So he honestly wobbles down the corridor, and I'm looking at Kempy and going, he's not going to be no good for us today. Kempy says, just stick him on the bench. And I say, here we go, stick him on the bench. So we go 1-0 up, one each, and then it goes 2-1 to us, two each, and they're playing down the slope now, and they are battering us. You know, the mixed manager, they're getting balls into the box, Chawcross and Uthia up, and Courty are heading balls out of everywhere, you know. It's like, so Kempy turns to me, he goes, get him on. And I said, Davey, you can't get him on. Get him on. He said, this is made for him. So it's full house there. So he runs up to warm up, runs up the side of the pitch, and he gets at the top of the pitch and he's turning, he's talking to the supporters. I got Kempy, look at him. He's up there. He's just life or death, mate. It's all over if we don't get through this game. He's up there, he's chatting away, and, you know, hello. Does he know they're Wolves supporters? They're not Stoke supporters. And Kempy's, get him on. So he comes down, drag someone off, and he goes on. We defend a corner, someone heads it out. Rick's not where he's supposed to be. Right, he's right on the edge of the box. Picks the ball up. Dribbles past two or three players. Smashes in the top corner. 3-2. Runs down the pitch. All the players are jumping on him and cuddling him and kissing him and everything else. 2 minutes later, da-da-da-da-da, never won. Does some magic. Passes it to Liam. Liam smashes it in. It went that way. We end up winning 4-2. So I'm washed out. I'm completely, you know, he's done my brains in before the game. And then I've had all the emotion of the game and it's a derby and this, that and the other. And we were up against it, but we win. So I get in the dressing room and I always, you know, I just say, listen, lads, fabulous. It's an important result and you were fantastic. No problems. So I sit in the corner. I take my cap off and I'm like a bathe of sweat. I can remember, I'm like this. And all of a sudden he gets up. And he walks across the dressing room, comes right next to me, puts his arm around me and says, Gaff. And I go, Rick. And he goes, you worry too much. And I go, what? And he went, that's why you got no hair, mate. And he just left me, walked across the room, did his little jig. And, you know, that was Rick. And then, you know, the lads, everybody wanted to be around Rick then. You know, they hated him before the game for what he'd done. After the game,
it's all forgotten.
It's amazing.
top
do you know what, Tim? When you were describing... a while ago, you were describing Glenn Whelan and you were like using different character attributes. You could say that he's a bit of a fighter. He's got a fighting quality.
No, he's a Celt. He's a proper Celt. You know, he's got that desire, that inner desire. It wouldn't surprise me if Glenn one day became a very, very good manager. Good coach, good man. He's just got that, he's got that personality and that character.
When talking about Glenn Whelan, if I were to say Breck Shea,
Brett, that was an interesting one, because the great thing about Brett was, I don't know, you've most probably heard the story, have you?
I know that something happened.
Yeah, there was I think it was Brett's first training session at the club, and we had, everybody knew the rules. So if someone fell over, There was always two or three people there to pick them up. Mm. Nobody got on anybody's backs. We'd always look after one another. It was that. We had that spirit within the camp. And we did a training session. We got 11 against 11, and Glenn missed it, crossfield pass. And Brett didn't know what the spirit or what the characteristic of the club was at the time. And he put his hands up in the air, just went, God. Anyway, I'm looking over there. Next thing I know, Glenn's over there sorting him out. He never, ever, ever do anything like that again at this football club. We don't criticise one another. We get on with things.
Did it get physical, or was it just more work?
I can't go into that, but it was.
That's a yes.
Understood. Hey, understood.
I'll just say this: Brett never ever put his hands up.
Oh, it's amazing. And talking of like leaders, and you know, on the pitch and off the pitch, Brian Shawcross always pops up in being a great leader.
We had Begovic was Begovic, Shawcross, and Robert Huthy. You know, we had Abdullah Five for a while as well. That triangle of strength. And then, like you say, you put Glenn and Dino or whoever in that midfield. That was really rock solid and proper characters. And Ryan, I made Ryan captain when he was only, I think, 19. There's a good story for that one as well. So it's pre-season. I go and watch Ryan play for Manchester United thirds up one of the non-league clubs around Manchester. So I race up on a Saturday. I think it was a 1 o'clock kickoff. We trained early, raced up there, watched him. Then went and watched him on the Tuesday night at another non-league ground around Manchester. Then rung Sir Alex up. Could we take him, you know, give you a loan, take the loan fee off if we sign him? So we agreed, I think, 1 million or 2 million, whatever it was. Anyway, we signed him. And his first game was at Cardiff. He's 19 years of age. And we went to Cardiff and won 1-0 and Ryan scored. And that was the promotion year. And for a kid, he played with Courtney then, Leon Court. And for a kid of that age to go through a season, to get promoted and play the way he played, it was just fabulous. Mm. And he got more confident and more confident and more confident as he went on.
Yeah.
Great lad.
So any specific examples of where he was a good leader?
Well, I'll tell you one thing I did do to him, which was really, really out of order, but it was because he was the captain. We played, I think it was Blackburn, and Sam was manager at Blackburn at the time. We went to Blackburn and we played exceptionally, and I mean exceptionally well, and we're 2-0 up at half time. You know, we scored a great goal from the goalkeeper, threw it out to Matty. Matty went down the wing, beat a couple of people, crossed it, and Crouchy headed at the back post. We were 2-0 up, and with about a couple of minutes to go, Ryan kicked the ball out of play. You know, he could have played it up the line, but he kicked it out of play. And the referee blew his whistle, and as I'm walking down the side of the pitch, I said to Kempy, this is the best we've played. And Dave turned to me and went, yeah, we've got to be a little bit careful now, you know, with the complacency. So I said, no, I've got it, mate, I've got it. So I walked in. I went into the toilet, went into the bathroom, as I always do. And then they're all chuckling away and everybody's happy with everybody else. It was really top-class first-half performance. And I went in and I thought, I'm going to go for it. So I picked on Ryan because he was my captain and I absolutely hammered him for kicking the ball out of play. And I just said, you know, you think we're 2-0 up, you lot think you're 2-0 up, you've done it, da-da-da-da. This is Blackburn. Sam's a top manager. You'll have them roaring second half. If you ain't on it, blah, 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 and you've just shown that you've dropped, you know, that standard that we'd set and dudded, absolutely hammered him. Anyway, I went into the bathroom before we go back out for the second half, and I've got Jonathan Woodgate and Matty Upson next to me, and Woody turns to me and says, Gaffer, he says, whatever you do, don't put me on, please. And I said, what? He says, I can't play as well as what Ryan's just played, and you just hammered him. I just looked at Woody and smiled and walked out. And then on the Monday, I pulled Ryan in and just said, you had to take one for the team there, son. Mm. I thought you played really, really well, but you had to take it for
Did he get it? Was he on board with it?
Well, I think he had a bad weekend. I think he recovered on Monday after I'd spoken to him.
But there's no like ill feelings when you get that kind of dressing down. There's no like...
I think there's, you know, I've fallen out with loads of people and loads of players and everything else. You know, but, you know, I had Andy Griffin. Me and Griff fell out right at the end. You know, we wanted to play more football. And I don't blame him for that. He was a top player. We had a bit of a fallout, but did I have respect for Griff? Yeah, enormous respect. Great, great lad. Again, another winner. Wanted to, you know, really give everything for the football club, local boy. And you do. You have those, you know, you have those moments in management. I think it's less so today, but I think, you know, there was confrontation or a little bit of confrontation then, sorting things out and getting things done properly. You know, you're always challenged as a manager. You're always challenged, whether it's what you're doing to prepare the players or, you know, things that they don't think is necessary. And, you know, I think there can only be, you know, one singer and one song if you're going to be successful. And that's, you know, that's always been my way and my attitude, really.
You always had a very good relationship with Matthew Etherington.
Matty, the lad used to say he was my...
Teacher's pet.
Yeah, teacher's pet and everything else. I thought Matty was an outstanding player. We took him from Tottenham and he'd had one or two issues off the pitch. I think he's gone into that himself and I think people know. His balance, when he was on song, his balance and the pace and the quality of crosses he got in was just exceptional. Like I said, we were very, very fortunate to have, for a good period, Matty and Jermaine. Jermaine was, again, a very, very clever player with the ball. And the quality he had as well was fantastic. But no, Matty was, he was a little winger amongst a lot of big people playing in that team, and he got spoiled.
And did you get a lot of banter like in the changing room with like calling him teacher's pet, or was it just a bit?
Just now and then they'd bring it up. If you know, if I said everybody in on Monday apart from you, Matt, you can have a day off. You know, they weren't too happy with little things like that.
Would that actually happen? Would you? No,
you know, that little things that I'd let him off, or I'd say, you know, we were absolutely rubbish Saturday. Apart from you, Matt. And his little twinkle in his eye. But he was one you had to keep on side. You know, some you can kick, others you have to cuddle. And, you know, again, that's management.
And any transfer regrets?
There's always people that you try to sign. You know, we had Alonso in.
Xavi Alonso?
The lad who was at Chelsea.
And Marcus Alonso.
Yeah. We had him in from Blackburn. I think he was at Blackburn. Then was it Bolton?
Bolton.
We had him in and never signed him. And then he went on and did fantastically well. He's a lovely kid as well. Lovely kid. People like that. Yeah, there's people we've missed.
Serge Gnabry?
I'll say this again, and I've said it loads of times. We'll start with the fact that Gnabry was at Arsenal for 4 years. So he's an Arsenal player. He had Arsene Wenger there as his manager. 4 years. And then they loaned him out. And they loaned him out because they couldn't get anything out of him. If he was doing well, he'd have stayed at Arsenal, but they couldn't get nothing out of him. So he came to us. Baldy rang me up, Steve Baldy, great lad, ex, obviously, Stoke player. And he said he's worth it, he's got loads of ability, but we're wits end with him. He came and didn't do very well. And that year, I think we finished 10th. Well, we were definitely in the top 10. And we had people like Morrison, Brunt, real good players. And Serge just, he just didn't fit into the group. As a matter of fact, there was a reserve game against Aston Villa and Jimmy Shan took it, who was the reserve team manager. And we used to let, you know, we'd say we want those players to play. And then we let Jimmy take it and Darren Moore and people like that. And I never watched that game. I actually I think I was home for some reason. It was on a Monday evening. And when I rang, Kempy went to the game. When I rang Kempy up and asked him, Jimmy had taken him off at half time. He was that bad. And then when he went on, you know, Arsenal then, he went back to Arsenal. Arsenal then sold him to Werder Bremen. You know, so I think Wenger maybe didn't see what we didn't see.
Yeah.
We get hammered for having him, you know, people say, oh, blimey, what a miss. What they don't think, he wasn't our player. We just had him for a few months. Wenger had him all that period and didn't see nothing in him. So, you know, and Kempe, I can remember a great quote, you know, I ring Kempe up and say, oh, you know, I'm pleased the kid's done well. You know, I have no bad feelings towards the kid at all. Mm. And I think most probably the West Brom, going to West Brom and thinking he was just going to walk in, most probably gave him the biggest kick up the backside he'd had. Mm. They sold him to Werder Bremen, and then he went on to, obviously, Bayern and done wonderful things. I can remember ringing Kempe up one day and saying, have you seen Gnabry? You know, he scored again for Madrid, for Bayern. Munich. And he said to me, Tom, it must be his twin brother. It cannot be the lad we had. And that's serious. You know, it was chalk and cheese.
Just finally on Gnabry, was it more of like do you think it was a skill thing, or was it, do you think it was attitude?
No, I just think he found it. And I'll say this, the first loan that a player gets from the top three or four club is always difficult for him, because they are spoilt, absolutely rotten. Arsenal, Tottenham, Chelsea. Go and have a look at their facilities. Go and have a look at, you know, the way they're fed, the way they're looked after. You know, they're everything else. They're completely and utterly spoilt. And they're playing with proper players. Mm. And I mean top players. And when you drop down just a little level, it's more difficult to get that feeling, that edge. And I always say, if people ring me up now and say, he's a good player at Arsenal. Has he been out on loan yet? Mm. Has he tasted it yet?
Yeah, right.
Let him go somewhere else. Let him taste it. When he comes back, see if you can get him a second time round or a third time round, because he'll be much more prepared for the real battles than what they are playing under 21's academy football.
So I now need to ask you this. This is the one I've been waiting for. James Beattie, nude. What happened here?
No, well let's put that season, if you actually look at the season that we signed, and it was you know, the winter window, we were struggling at the time. I think we were third from bottom. We signed Matty Etherington and James, and without those two, I don't think Stoke would have stayed in the Premier League. So those two played an enormous part. The incident in the dressing room I will not talk about, because I'm old-fashioned and I believe what happens in the dressing room happens in the dressing room. But I'll say this, Beattie, for when he was with us, he did fantastic. And he kept us in, him and Matty, really was the icing on the cake that kept us in the league.
Do you talk to him now?
Well, I don't know where he is.
So no.
So no, 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 I don't know where he is.
Where is he? I thought he was coming through the door.
This is your life.
Yeah. So, Tony, we are going to play a little game with you. It's called Glass or Pass. Okay, so we're just going to give you a manager. And, you know, historically, famously, people will have, you know, have a drink with the managers after the game. Yeah. So we're just asking, give you a manager, and you just tell us whether you have a drink with them or you'd pass and leave. All right? So the first one is Ian Holloway.
Glass.
What was it about Ian Holloway that you enjoyed?
He was godfather to my first child. Oh. So Ian was a 14-year-old lad at Bristol Rovers when I first met him. He was about that high. Can you see that? He was knee high.
About my high.
And obviously I played and seen Ian grow at Bristol Rovers. So, yeah, he was godfather to my son Anthony.
Sir Alex Ferguson.
Glass.
Arsene Wenger.
Pass. Yep.
I need to hear more about this. Anything to...
No, listen, the lads would go in and have a drink with Arsene. Kempe always went in the rooms. I think Rudgie did as well, and one or two other people. But I did have the ump with him for what he said initially when we played at Stoke. And yeah, you know, we've spoken since and we've been fine. So we're better now that we're not in the game.
Can you just remind us, what was the quote, the famous quote that he said?
He classed us as a rugby team, and he thought that throwing should be banned and that you should just play with your foot.
He's still doing. He's still on that one about the throwing. You know, you've left the sky. You know, in his role now, he honestly thinks that a throw-in puts the team that win the throw-in at a disadvantage, and he therefore thinks that it should be something else.
Yeah, send him the tapes of Stoke City.
Yeah, yeah.
See how disadvantaged we were.
Yep. Love that. Pep Guardiola.
Oh, glass.
Yeah. Would you rate him as one of the top managers that you've ever come up against?
Also one of the nicest people I've met as well. So I've luckily managed against him a couple of times. I got my backside slapped a few times with their team. But he's a nice man as well. He really impressed my staff with how humble he is and how nice he is, yeah.
Jurgen Klopp?
No, that was a pass. When I took teams to Liverpool before, it was Kenny, and I'd always go in and have a drink with Kenny because I knew Kenny and the family. He had a family room. And then with Brendan, I'd always go in and have a drink with Brendan. But with Klopp, it just, you know, some foreign managers don't have that same come in and have a drink with us, and you know, it's different for them. So no, we didn't see Klopp.
What about Jose Mourinho?
A glass. Yeah, he was up for a glass of wine.
Was
yeah.
he? Yeah. I heard something about Jose Mourinho. I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard that if he liked the opposition manager, he'd give them a bottle of Portuguese wine that he himself
yeah,
really
I had a
liked.
Couple of bottles.
Oh, did you? Yeah. Okay, so you got the nice stuff.
Yeah, did you get the nice stuff?
You got the nice stuff.
Yeah.
Love that. Yeah. Love yeah. that. What about Alan Pardew?
Glass. Yeah.
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 And what was Alan Pardew like as a manager? Obviously, we saw I don't forget his antics in the FA Cup final. Yeah.
Good dancer, very yeah, good dancer.
Yeah. Do you remember, what was he like?
No, I think Pardew was Southeast London boy. You know, he's a bit smart. but no, you know, again, I've you know, he was at Reading when I started. Oh, sorry, when he started, I was obviously further down the line than Alan. But no, we've always gone all right. Yes.
And finally, Sam Allardyce.
Glass.
Yeah.
Bottle.
Pint.
Bucket.
Tony, thank you so much. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. So we would love to have you back on at some point to talk about West Bromwich Albion and Crystal Palace. But for now, we're going to have to say goodbye. And thank you so much to Tony Pulis.
Thank you very much.